Trucks, boats, scooters, and many other vehicles are accepted, so don't delay. Call today.
Again, that number is 1-855-KPFT-CAR, 573-8277. This is KPFT Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
And welcome to another edition of Technology Bites. Yay.
Welcome to the show. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Yay, Groovehouse. We've got Pete in the studio tonight.
All right.
Yay.
So Flicted was not so challenged to get things going.
I had to mess with the volume on his mic, so
he's
sounded
all extra
bad.
Relaxed.
He's got the dog bark app.
I can talk like a robot later.
Yes, let's
and
do that.
Stutter like Max Headroom, for those of you who are old enough to know who the hell that is.
The actor who... What's the actor's name who played?
Matt Frewer.
Frewer.
Oh, wow. You guys are slurp.
He's still doing stuff.
He
shows
he,
up and
he just got
down.
His yeah. character just got killed off in Falling Skies.
Yeah, he's right. He frequently gets
Who
killed
off. Who
is
he in Falling Skies? I've seen an episode or two of that.
He's, I don't know if you've gotten to...
Only season one. So
oh, it's season two.
Okay.
Season two.
He's well, that's worth going to see season two,
him.
Just because.
The sky fell on him. I know spoiler. It's a spoiler.
Did it hurt his head and he talked funny?
He fell from the sky, actually. But, yeah, so I've seen him floating around. That's been kind of interesting.
You're floating around. This phone you're talking about, it says water-resistant design.
Yes.
Does that mean, like, they laminated the schematics? Can you actually get the phone wet?
I don't know how wet you can get it. I think it's mostly designed so, like, if it's on a tabletop and you spill fluid around it.
It's your phone, Barrett.
I know.
It is your phone.
That's awesome.
Maybe my phone.
Well, it's got an 11 mega... Okay, we're talking about the new Sony phones.
Xperia.
It got a lot of rave reviews at the electronic show, but it wasn't available in the United States. It's come to the States, but only with one carrier. It's T-Mobile that has it. But it is a flagship phone for T-Mobile to have, and it looks really, really good. Well, it's got an 11-megapixel camera.
13.
On it. 13. I was wrong.
I've got the stats.
There's a Windows phone that's coming shortly that has 41 megapixels.
What?
That's
what?
Yep. It's part of Nokia, or as Steve Ballmer calls it, Nokia. Nokia has like done a lot of stuff with fancy cameras on smartphones, but not in the Windows phone arena with some of their previous ones, and now they're bringing this over to the Windows phone, so that should be really interesting.
Maybe they should merge with Nikon, and then it could be Nikonia.
I think the storage manufacturers are putting them up to this.
Nokon.
The only people who benefit. Supposedly the next version of Gorilla Glass is going to be glare resistant and smudge resistant and a whole bunch of other smart
technology. Smudge resistant?
That's what I read on Slashdot.
Antimicrobial.
Microbial.
Well, once they can't pack more features into a phone, I think what's left is like making it, you know, virtually indestructible
You should become a quality engineer, quality tester.
I want to be the guy that just breaks stuff. Like, that's my job.
You are that guy. You're just not getting
professionally.
Paid. You haven't leveraged that into a pay.
Yeah, I know. I just don't get paid for it. The money's flowing the wrong way with that whole
In its heyday, Compaq had a whole team whose job it was to go out and buy other computers, take them apart, break them, kind of see where their weak points were. That would be just an awesome.
There's actually a division at the who's the company that does all the product reviews? Consumer Reports.
Right.
They have an entire division that's what they do, is they just stress test. Like, they'll take different washing machines from different manufacturers and stress test them.
I'm sure the suitcase in the gorilla cage.
They don't actually use real gorillas anymore.
I guess that's humane. I guess that's okay.
Well, I'm sure they got virtual gorillas that are pretty convincing.
Well, I guess they've got real baggage handlers for that now, so.
It's true enough. They just send one to the airport.
Could just send them to China. I don't know if y'all saw that video.
Does anybody check bags anymore?
Saw it. Yeah, there was a video where there was a big pallet had come up, and there was a Chinese employee supposed to be loading the plane with him, and he was picking him up three at a time and just turning and chunking them at the conveyor belt, and they would bounce, and sometimes one would stay on the conveyor belt, but most of them would fall off to the side.
Now he's doing
this. So he went through a whole pallet, like 6 minutes of this, and when he got done, half of them were on the ground. And then finally somebody else came up to help him, and they all put him on the conveyor
belt. He's doing this, and the plane is, like, full. The plane is loaded, and there are people with their camera phones watching.
There was a British guy that was filming
it. Put stuff on the plane, and, he put a new meaning to lousy baggage handling. He just could not be bothered to take that extra step to put it on the conveyor belt that would go up into the plane.
Or he could practice his aim. You know, he could get better from the free throw line.
Was Yao Ming that good?
Did he start out as a baggage handler?
Probably could have reached. See, though, Yao Ming could have reached the conveyor belt just with his arms, but.
All right. Well, welcome to the show. You can visit us online at geekradio.com. That website still works. It didn't work for a little while, somebody told me. But
really?
No, it was my fault. I edited the htaccess file, and I did it badly.
Nobody can get in.
And I did it poorly, so fortunately I keep a backup just in case of an emergency. So, geekradio.com, visit us online there. You can use the contact page to send us a note if you don't want to call and be on the air during the call-in portion. You can also subscribe to the podcast there. And if you get the podcast working, if you are listening to the podcast and you want to use the Apple Podcast app to download, that was not working for a while. And I got a number of emails from people who said they could not get the podcast app to automatically download the podcast. And I loaded that on mine and tried it. And sure enough, it wasn't working. And I emailed Pete about it, and he couldn't see anything that was causing it. And on a lark, I tried one thing, which was we use a plugin for WordPress called PodPress. And PodPress is a pretty impressive plugin, which allows you to, you know, send certain content as a podcast and publish it to iTunes and so forth. And it has a statistics feature, which when it works is great. It tells you how many of your podcasts are being downloaded, and you can get all the IP addresses, where it's coming from, which IP address is hammering you. So if you got scrapers coming at you, unfortunately, when you enable that, it breaks a lot of stuff. I don't know why, but it just does. So I disabled it.
But it doesn't, on the stats, though, it doesn't say that I've blocked 400 people from downloading.
You should have unchecked to break everything.
No, I looked in the logs, and you would see the request came in for the podcast just like it was supposed to. It would hit the logs, and then, but then on the app, it would just say download file. Download failed. Tap to try again, and never worked. But so if you've had to find a workaround, or you gave up on the podcast because your iDevice wasn't using the podcast app to download it, it now works, so you can switch back to using the app on your iPhone. And it's actually cool. I've actually downloaded, I have it set up on my podcast app, and I've been listening to it in my car. We're very funny.
Mm. You crack you up?
I crack me up. Saying? I slay me. All right. If you want to be on the air with us a little bit later on, after we do the Technology Bytes info shot, you can call 713-526-5738. Groovehouse is so anxious to talk to you right now. He wants to hear from you and be ready to, you know, just guide you on to being on the air with us. He's got that big, like, I want to talk to you smile.
Sparkling.
So we will be taking your calls. And we've been struggling to get calls the last couple of weeks. It seems a little kind of just been, we've also had missing man formation, so that's I think had an effect.
This
on
is the opposite of missing man.
Yeah, we're X-Man.
Also though, when didn't XP support, official XP support, like end
next
you,
year?
You would think that was
next year.
Next year.
Oh.
The calls will go up at that point.
Way up.
All right, so we'll do the info shot and then we'll go to the phones and take your calls to be on the air. So if you want to get in the queue for that, 713-526-5738 or 713-526-LSDU if you want to be on the air with us. So right now we will go to San Antonio, realize that Pete's not there, come back to the studio and
at
do
the speed of light.
And maybe you see if the dogs will bark.
Take it away, info shot.
It's the Technology Bytes info shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injecting it directly into your skull.
Okay, well, starting with the not-so-great news for some things, you know, watching the, you know, in the show, if you think about it, we've watched the, like, death of a lot of things, and the birth of the internet and all that, but one of the things that I did not think we would be seeing was the decline in the PC business. After the first quarter wasn't so great, if you were waiting for a bounce back in the PC market, you'll have to keep looking. Both Gartner and IDC estimate that shipments fell about 11% year-over-year in the second quarter. The two analyst groups blame the decline on sluggish uptake in a few regions, most notably China and Europe, as well as a market that favors tablets over low-end computers. It's easy to agree after seeing the numbers. Acer and Asus faced steep declines as they switched their attention towards tablets and ultrabooks, and even top-seeded Lenovo, who's number one again or still, kind of took a beating. Let's see. HP, Dell, and Lenovo did do better in the U.S. than they have recently. Gartner and IDC attribute that to the resurgence of the corporate world, where the end of Windows XP support in 2014 may be pushing some upgrades to PCs running at least Windows 7. It's not quite the broader recovery that vendors are hoping for, but it may have to suffice when any help as far as sales from Windows 8.1 coming out or OS 10 Mavericks. I don't know why the plural on that one. They didn't have Lions. It wasn't OS 10 Lions.
I think it's the name of a place in California.
It's where all the big wave surfers go
they
to.
Went
it's
from
where the
big cats lake is. To yeah, Mavericks. Okay. Eventually, they're all going to start. What I'm waiting for is when they run out of stuff and then they start overlapping. And so then it'll show how old you are when your grandchildren are telling you about the, I don't know, the when they start using rivers in Oregon or whatever, like Intel used to use for their stuff. And you think that it's something else because you're that old. anyway, so that, yeah, sales are down on PCs. We'll keep an eye on that one. Clearly, you know, the difference is, though, people are using smartphones and tablets and finding that meets their needs. Because even, you know, you look at the prices and pricing on laptops, unless you're going for something premium like an Ultrabook, is very, very competitive. Especially the ironic thing to me is that a lot of these laptops are cheaper than a tablet, and tablets are really selling, where the laptop is kind of, I guess it's sort of the used car effect kind of thing. T-Mobile keeps trying to do new things to attract their customers and take a different approach to all this. They had a big announcement today where they have a new phone upgrade program called Jump. Now, I don't know, did they use Van Halen or did they use, what was it, Crisscross?
Let's do the Van Halen.
Yeah.
David Lee Roth.
Which this is designed to allow subscribers to upgrade their phones at regular intervals. With Jump, customers will pay the same subsidized amount that a new customer pays without the need to wait to qualify for an upgrade. You know, most places you buy a phone, and you got to wait 2 years. Jump requires T-Mobile customers to pay a $10 monthly fee for the service, and they have to trade in the old devices. But it offers up to 2 phone upgrades per year after a 6-month waiting period.
So you'd pay $400, basically, for a high-end smartphone in 2 years, right? $400 altogether?
I guess so, yeah, if it's like $20 a month for the payment plan. I guess I'm wondering, doesn't it vary based on the phone that you end up buying?
Most high-end smartphones come in about $199 to start.
This may be real clever with that combined with having the iPhone and some of these others where you can just basically keep going with the flagship phone. Now, the smart part, though, is, you're trading in. Basically, this is leasing a phone. You know, you're doing a lease and you just pay for the time you use it, but you never stop paying then.
Right.
You keep paying the $20. At some point, I guess the numbers maybe are better, but when you never really pay it off, does this turn them right back into the AT&T Verizon, you know, discount you, except you don't have to wait the 2 years. I guess there's that. But it starts getting to where as they add these things to get people to come over, to make it appealing, because obviously if you pay $500 for an iPhone to buy it brand new and use on T-Mobile, you're not going to want to swap out that quick.
Well, they have the way they're charging for the phones. You can pay it up front in one big lump sum, or they'll do a $20 a month for 2 years
financing.
And so you, by the time you add the $10 a month for the Jump program, which also includes insurance for it, and then you add the whatever you're paying monthly for the phone if you go that route, and then you have the price you pay for the data plan, you probably get close to what AT&T and Verizon.
I wonder, do you have to pay the down payment when you get the new phone? Because, you know, it's like it says here on their payment plan, there's a down payment of $150 and then $20 a month device fee. They also plan to create a new family plan for customers without enough credit to qualify for traditional phone contracts, and they're expanding their LTE network. So if you're a frequent upgrader – now, the thing is, if you do this program and your phone is all busted and wrecked, they're going to charge you for the damage.
Like leasing a car.
Yeah. They're going to – they will not – you won't just go swap it out like you think if something's wrong with it like that. They did mention that in the announcement. And in, I guess, bad Android news, you know, there was that big – that master key exploit, which I don't think I mentioned last week. But if you've got an Android phone, you better have heard about it. There's now an app – from a company called Blue Box Security that will tell you if your phone is still vulnerable to the exploit. It was a long-standing exploit in Android firmware dating back to version 1.6 that allowed malicious developers to circumvent software security measures. So they released an app so you can check if your phone's still vulnerable. Since Blue Box's report last week, Google acknowledged the issue and released a patch that it says is in the hands of manufacturers and already being pushed out by certain manufacturers. Samsung is apparently one. The app is thankfully free and should provide some much-needed reassurance to most Android users. So you can look that one up. Blue Box Security is the place. For free, if you've got an Android phone and you don't know for sure, I would think it's really a good idea to check it, just so that you could have that peace of mind. And now a couple Apple things. This one, if you've got an iPad, and you know, if they were giving away free stuff on the Google Nexus store or whatever, I'd be talking about it too. For the 5th anniversary of the App Store, has it really been 5 years?
Yes.
So Technology Bytes was only 13 when they had the App Store. Anyways, that was when they announced the iPhone 3G and iPhone OS 2.0. To celebrate, though, Apple is giving away a handful of high-profile apps for $0. Now, you know, it's not like you're not saving $100 or anything, but it's stuff like Frogmind's Badland, Infinity Blade 2. A lot of people like that one. Mm-hmm. Super Brothers Sword and Sorcery EP, Tiny Wings and Tiny Wings HD, and Disney's Where's My Water. Another one that might be interesting to you, if that's the games. And then there's some other ones that are not games. Barefoot World Atlas, which is just an interesting one. Day One, a journal and note-taking app, which is usually $5. How to Cook Everything, Bobby Bittman's book, the New York Times food critics thing, as an app that's usually $10. And right now it is $0.
Oh, my wife loves that cookbook. She
so
loves that cookbook.
Download it for the iPad for nothing.
Yeah.
And then the last one, Tractor DJ for iPhone and iPad, which is usually, the iPad one's $20, and you can get it for nada. So that, you know, yeah, I mean, sorry if you didn't like the ginormous ad for Apple, but of course you got to already have an iPad or iPhone to take advantage of these, so it's not like I'm selling you something new. But grab the free stuff. I'm all about the free stuff. So
the cookbook is a good one. I like that one. I got that one for my wife today. The Barefoot Atlas is moderately interesting. It's not that great.
I skipped that one. I did get the cookbook.
The notebook one looks interesting, and the camera one looks like it's fun.
Over?
Yeah,
the one that,
over.
That let, I guess it lets you put text on top of photos.
Yeah.
So that
it's
was
more
cool.
Groovehouse's style than mine, but he didn't have an eye anything.
In other Apple news, just the quickie rumor roundup, the thing this past week, you know, there's been the occasional popping up low-end, you know, cheaper iPhone rumors and different color backs that are showing up in different places. There's also, this one was a little bit more interesting, the talk is that they're gearing up, that they're getting closer to the iPhone launch, that seems to be growing near, and I'm guessing probably September or October, but on the iPad 5 is also rumored to be getting soon. The bigger thing that might get to people, the iPad 5 is going to be like the iPad 4, smaller bezel, look a little more like a mini, but the other specs, I mean, it sounds like are going to be generally, it's not going to be some kind of radical, much longer battery life, those kinds of things, or much lighter or much heavier or any of that stuff. The mini with a Retina display, which, that's the one I'm, like, really waiting for. I want to get my hands on one of those. Apple is still deciding, apparently. And one of the things with this, the way you can keep track of some of this stuff is for Apple to sell these devices, the suppliers have to be making quantities that make sense. And that size display with that resolution is not a common thing to be found in any kind of high yield.
But if Apple started selling it, it certainly would be.
All right, but they got to have a couple months ahead of time where they got the displays so they can make the stock to sell. The most recent rumors on it, which were not necessarily from the best rumor sources, but was that Apple was still deciding, and that if they did go ahead with it, that it would be on the very tail end of this year before they could really get it geared up and going. In other news, this one's probably a little more, this one's a little less rumory. Apple is apparently going to adopt, the rumor is that they're going to adopt IGZO displays for future iPads and MacBooks. That the IGZO stands for indium gallium zinc oxide. So you're like a third of the way through the periodic table just by not abbreviating the name. Now, using those displays to reduce the energy consumption on mobile devices. According to, ETNews.com, said, quote, according to industry insiders, having decided to apply the IGZO method to displays for MacBook, Apple is talking with LCD panel manufacturers such as Sharp and LG. IGZO is a semiconducting material that has 40 times more electron mobility than the standard amorphous silicon. You know, I always want more electron mobility on my LCD screens. It allows for higher resolution displays. That's good. Better reaction times. Also good. And less power consumption. The report suggests that in addition to expanding to IGZO displays for the MacBook, Apple's planning to put them in the iPad. They're said to be relying on Sharp for the displays. Really? Because I would think that maybe they'd go to Samsung. Not. You know, those guys are too busy having a peeing match. Now, Apple said to be relying on Sharp for the displays, and last year news surfaced that Sharp had already begun mass production of IGZO displays that could be used in future Apple products. The site expects the IGZO MacBooks to appear in the first half of next year, but does not note when an IGZO iPad might make an appearance. Of course, let's do the math. This fall, there's going to be another iPad. You don't have to, that doesn't have to be the, like, nobody has to be too psychic. You're not the amazing Kreskin if you could figure that one out. There's a phone coming and an iPad coming.
They're not Kreskin.
They're not going to go through the Christmas season trying to sell you last year's iPad and last year's iPhone. There's just no way. So, of course, the soonest an iPad could come out with that would be, unless it was the mini with the higher display, the Retina display, like I was talking about, in the early part of next year, that would be the only way it would be any sooner than late next year. So, anyway, sorry to throw cold water on it if you were liking that electron mobility and stuff. And finally, on new stuff, transferring files on micro SD cards is often not a high-speed affair. The SanDisk has got a new Extreme line of micro SD cards that promises to deliver speeds of up to 80 megabits per second. Benchmarks done by Android Police have the 64 gig card hitting 78 when used in a dedicated card reader. Putting the card in a smartphone, however, yields far different results. Most smartphones don't support the newer standard for increased transfer speeds. So, like in a Galaxy Note 2, SanDisk's new card only achieved 14 megabits per second, read and write, basically. That's still between 50 and 100% faster than a previous generation 64 gig SanDisk micro SD card. So that's good. But once the handset makers go up to micro SD, then you might be able to have something that'll let you transfer some files with some speed. And that's the news.
All right. Except you left out a huge story.
The Alta Vista?
No. Who's in town?
Oh.
Who's in town in Houston where you don't live? Huh?
Bomber.
Cindy Lauper. Microsoft has 15,000 people here for a convention through tomorrow.
And they're all listening. They're all listening at the convention center.
I told them to.
Well, and I guess the other thing just to look forward, to look forward to if you're a big Microsoft follower or Microsoft head is tomorrow, I believe, is when Ballmer is rumored to announce his big reorganization of Microsoft.
Right. The only real news for consumers that came out of the Worldwide Partner Conference that they're having down at the George R. Brown Convention Center, which was announced on Monday, is that they expect Windows 8.1 to be finished and shipped off to computer manufacturers at the end of August, which means it will make it onto machines for the Christmas holiday, which, you know, Windows 8, IDC has said that it thinks that Windows 8 is the reason why, for consumers at the very least, and certainly for businesses, because they don't not interested in it, the PC sales have tanked. And so Windows 8.1 is a lot better. I have a Surface here, and I've got it on here, the preview version. And so I think they have a good shot at kind of redeeming themselves to a certain extent. But it's still like that Metro interface.
I'm still waiting for Windows 8.3.
Well, that's when they get it right. That's when they get it right. Actually, 8.2 would be the third generation.
Oh, that's true. Okay.
So that was an end. But other than that, it's kind of mostly been like serious geeky server stuff. There was this really cool demo during the keynote on Monday for a thing called Power BI, which I think is business intelligence. And it is a visualization tool for big data. And they took the charts for the Billboard charts since 1955 and visualized them as big dots and little dots for various artists who dominated and those who came up and replaced them. So it starts out with like Elvis Presley in the middle, and then he kind of shrinks down. The Beatles grow up, and then they dominate for a while, and then Elton John comes in and winds up in 2012 with Rihanna. And it was fascinating because the guy who did the demo was calling it like a horse race. And it was one of the few, like, business tech demos I've ever seen that was actually entertaining. People were, like, cheering on their favorite artist. It was really well done.
And then they did a visualization of audience interest, and you could see it peak out as the various age levels. And by the end, it was who? Who's first?
So how was it, like, you know, every time I've seen one of the Apple keynotes, the production values are like through the roof. They just look great. I was watching the live stream of the Microsoft conference, and I think that they did themselves a bit of a disservice putting themselves in the middle of an arena.
Yeah, it was in the round.
Yeah.
And if you saw it, if you were there and you saw it, it made sense because they moved from one station to the other. And so, and Ballmer kind of walked in a circle. I would imagine the live stream.
Paced around the outside like a professional wrestler.
That's exactly what he looked like. I found myself just looking at the big, because they use the big jumbotrons over, you know, they're used with the Rockets games. And so I found myself just watching that because they were so little down below. The press room was up on one of the higher levels.
The audio had echo. You know, so you could hear them. They would talk. It was like, I just expected them to, you know, have a prize fight or something. Like, okay, we're going to bring out this mock-up of Steve Jobs and Ballmer's going to wail on it or something. So it
lasted 3 hours and 16 minutes. And I decided I was going to live blog this because we're testing Scribble Live, which is a really good live blogging platform. And so I was live blogging. And I thought, oh, you know, an hour and a half, Ballmer, a few demos, that'll be it. 3 hours and 16 minutes of live blogging is a serious challenge. My brain was putting, or more pudding than usual.
We're surprised you're here tonight.
It was amazing. It was amazing.
We just had a caller call in and say that most of the attendees are here for Lenny Kravitz tonight.
Yes, that's right. There's a big party with Lenny Kravitz, right?
Minute Maid Park.
Yeah, right.
One-off
right.
show for the event.
Yep.
Well, if that's the best they can do.
You'd think they'd have learned, you know, if you're going to do a sort of big event like that, that they'd have learned from something. You know, if you can't do Apple, which I don't think they can out-Apple, partly because Apple has more control over the whole deal than Microsoft would, wouldn't you go more of a TED format?
That's an interesting idea. It wasn't an Apple-like format. It was not that. This wasn't a consumer audience, and it was this was the people who buy Microsoft products and resell them to business customers. And so it's not, you know, it was not that audience. In fact, the thing with the business intelligence visualization was not the usual part of this. It was hard to stay awake and tight.
Well, I'm glad I didn't go. But I'm sure there were some very interesting people there. I saw the call. We just lost one of the calls, but oh well. Attrition. What was it like to be there? I mean, like, were the people interesting?
I mean, as much as there is, they were not the same type of people you see at CES.
Right.
It was more businessy. It was a lot like some of the folks. Well, it wasn't even like the people. I went to the first Build conference. And that was developers, and so that was, you know, programmers, and so that's a different. But these were like people who are doing deals, and they come in to see what Microsoft's doing, so they can pass on to their customers. There is a trade show floor, and so you did get to see a lot of computers and tablets and so forth. And they had Ford had a big display with a lot of vehicles with Sync in it, and that was pretty cool.
At the end of the 3.5 hour talk by Ballmer, did anyone in the audience?
It wasn't just Ballmer.
Oh, is everybody? Yeah. Okay. That makes a little bit
better.
He had
maybe about 15 minutes, and then he was out of there.
Okay, that's better. Did anyone look like afflicted at the end of the talk?
The guy who did the business intelligence horse race thing kind of looked a little like afflicted.
I should also mention that the Geek Gathering on Friday was good.
Yes, that was a good one. It was our birthday. Even my lovely wife was there, and she said, yes, I enjoyed it. So
you and your computer stuff, honey. Patted him on the head.
She liked the Blinken box. The Blinken box is evolving nicely.
Yeah.
It has its own
Twitter account.
Yeah.
Dwight's easily amused.
Yeah, this is Jim Thompson, the NASA contractor, who is has this little Arduino project where he's outfitting a tackle box with all kinds of interesting things. It's got a lot of lights and switches and so forth. We're all waiting for him to make it dance to music, but it doesn't do that.
I think the box is like eclipsed his other credentials. I think we started saying, like, you know, Jim Thompson, the creator of the Blinken box. And, oh, yeah, by the way, he's a contractor for
All right, phone number is 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us tonight. Groovehouse has screened a couple of calls, or has screened one call, and is about to screen the next one. So we'll take that first call, Groovehouse.
All right. First up, we are going to speak with Joe.
Hey, Joe.
Howdy, y'all. This is Joe.
Hi, Joe. What can we do for you tonight?
Can you hear me?
We sure can.
All right. Well, I have a question. My whatchamacallit appears to be freewheeling whenever the gizmo interfaces with the doodad and the who's it. Is there anything I can do about this?
Well, you can... Is that what you have for us, Joe? Uh-huh. All right. Yep.
Go solid state.
invest in pork futures.
No moving parts.
Hi, I'm stupid and it's funny.
I'm a picking and I'm a grinning. Guy held on for a long time to do that.
So. He did.
Yeah, all the other legitimate callers hung up, but he had the staying power just to
Yeah, other people have jobs, so they can't do that.
If only he had been able to, like, work it around to a blinking red light.
Or something, yeah. If only I had a clever...
When you're longing for the Transformers.
If I had a grizzled prospector response lined up for that.
You'll think about it. You'll be falling asleep tonight and saying, damn, I should have said...
Yeah, the spirit d'escalier. All right, so 713-526-5738. We are glad if you can amuse yourselves listening to this show any way that you possibly can.
I don't always call into technology shows, but when I do, I sound like a prospector.
23's canoe.
There's gold in
them. There's gold in them.
Bad news, everyone.
All right, Farnsworth. All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who's up next?
Up next, a real call this time, maybe.
Are you sure?
Hopefully.
I hope you're right.
Hey, he started with a hard drive problem, so I was like...
I know.
I kind of, you know, we went with it. But.
Yeah.
Okay. Up next, we're going to speak with Dave.
Dave, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, I put a drive in my wife's computer. It's a SATA, and I couldn't get it to recognize it. What would be some possible reasons, and do you have to use the jumpers on there, on the SATA, as opposed to the IED ones?
Well, the SATA drives don't require jumpers because the drive is keyed to the SATA controller, so you don't have to switch jumpers to have master and slave and so forth like that. What is the situation with the computers? Have you got more than one drive in there?
Yeah, it's she has a drive in there. There's not very much space on it. It's a 60 gig or 80 gig, I think. So we put a 160 in as a secondary, but it wouldn't recognize it, and she just wants to have.
Well, have you got when you fire up the computer? I assume you're running Windows of some flavor or another.
It's Vista.
Have you gone into the disk manager to make sure that the drive has been partitioned and initialized?
No, didn't know how to do that.
All right, so what you have to do in Windows, and let me pull up my Windows here and see. If you go to the control panel, and let me see which one, and type in drive, I think, will allow you to do that. I'm trying to find it. There's an option to initialize the drive. I haven't had to do it in a while. Let's see. Yeah, if you click on Start and then Control Panel and then type Format in the search box, that will bring up the administrative tools item called Create and Format Hard Disk Partitions.
Okay.
And then what you should hopefully see when you... Do you need to deal with that? What you should hopefully see at this point is you'll see your main drive, and you might see a system reserve drive if the computer had a recovery partition, but then you'll see a drive that has nothing.
I just clicked on Windows, and it had all the drives, and it had the D, the C, and then the various letters, but none of them pulled up that 160.
Right, well, that's not the place that you need to be, because the drive has probably not been partitioned and assigned a drive letter yet.
Okay.
So that's why I'm saying if you go Start and then Control Panel. Are you in front of the computer now, or are you going to try to memorize this?
I'm writing it down. I'm actually at Walmart.
All right.
She sent me out on an assignment there, and I want to be there.
Well, if you... If you go to Start and then Control Panel, and then you type in Format in the search box at the top of that Control Panel window, that will take you to, it'll bring up some suggestions, and the first one is Administrative Tools, and it says Create and Format Hard Disk Partitions. But you're not going to be able to write this down and necessarily remember this when you get home. What I would recommend that you do is maybe go online and Google search Format Hard Drive Vista, and you'll probably find some step-by-step instructions that tell you what you need to do. But the drive is probably doesn't have a partition and has not had a drive letter assigned to it, so you have to go in there into the control panel for the disk management and initialize the drive and format it, tell it if it's going to be NTFS or FAT32, and then it'll assign it a drive letter. And then it'll show up, and you can start to copy data to it.
Okay. If it had a bad sector, would that make a difference?
Why would it have a bad sector?
There was something. She bought it at one of the big houses there, and then she took it over to another big house to look at, and they said it had a bad sector. I was thinking maybe it had a bad sector is why it wouldn't recognize it.
If you bought a defective drive, I mean, what do you say, the big house? Like, you took it to...
Took it to jail.
She got it at Micro Center, and it was one of those that were refurbed.
I see. And so then when you couldn't get it to work, you took it somewhere else?
Yeah, she took it over to the geek people.
Best Buy?
Not Best Buy, Fry's.
Fry's.
Yeah, their place, and they said it had a bad sector in it.
If they did some kind of test on the drive, and I don't know what they did, but if their tech looked at the drive and pronounced the drive defective, then I would take it back to Micro Center.
Okay, but then I'll do what you said once she gets another one.
Once she gets another one, if it doesn't immediately recognize it and assign it a drive letter, then you have to go through and initialize it. But you might save yourself some time and effort by taking the drive and the computer to Micro Center and just maybe have them set up the new drive.
Yeah, that would work too.
It'll cost you a little something, but I don't think they're that expensive, and it might save you a trip back and forth.
Well, it's the boss's, so you got to do what the boss says.
I understand. Well, the boss also writes the paycheck, so have her fund this little excursion.
Well, we're both writing it now.
So. All right.
Thanks.
Good luck.
All right.
713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with Technology Bites. Is Flick taking a nap?
He's a little under the weather.
Shh. Don't wake him up. All right. I see we have calls in the queue. We have about 10 or 12 minutes before the break, somewhere in there. What? I saw you leaning.
Checking out the time.
Oh, okay.
I'm up and over the laptop. There's a whole row of old Dwight doesn't have a MacBook.
Dwight, you're not with the program tonight.
No, I thought I'd come in, and I knew that there would be...
You apparently have to have a 13-inch Air to be at this table.
That's right.
They're all like... Although I'm sure there are variations between the models.
Yeah, this is
a keyboard, not a requirement.
Yeah, because boy, it would be really, really unfortunate if Jay's got like mixed up with mine. You know, when I went home at the end of the night, if you ever stepped away from the. Hey, is this somebody breaking into your car out there?
Hey, now. You don't want this.
Since you've got the.
You don't want this dumb old thing.
It's just got way too much disk space, and the battery life is just.
It's got great performance. You wouldn't like it. All right, Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who's up next?
All right, up next we are going to speak with Jeremy.
Jeremy, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Good evening, and thank you for all the good work you do.
Well, thank you for that.
I have this problem with Firefox 22.0 with the plugins for Shockwave Flash. I have a 11.6 R602, and it comes up every time I try and use it as disabled. Now I and update now because it's vulnerable. And I go to the Adobe page to try and update it, and I get a 50% initialization, and then it fails every time.
This is the Adobe Flash plugin for Firefox?
Yeah, they want me to take it from 11.6 to 11.7, and it disables everything from YouTube to everything on. And the... Every time I've tried it, and I've even tried disabling it and trying to reinstall, and I just run into Adobe 50% initializing, and then initialize fail.
What version of Firefox? Is it the latest version of Firefox?
Yeah, it's 22.0, which is the non-beta latest.
Okay. Oh,
and I've been to the Mozilla sites, and I've run through all their stuff, but it just... It locks up every time.
You tried the protect mode equals zero thing?
What is that? You're out of my comfort zone.
Which version of Windows did you say you were running?
What's that?
Which version of Windows did you say you were running?
I didn't. I say, but it's XP Pro Service Pack 2.
Really?
Ooh, Service nice. Pack 2? You haven't upgraded to 3?
Once I get Windows running so I crash all the time, it's in the stick.
Right. Well, if you're worried about updating your Flash, but you haven't upgraded to XP Service Pack 3, you're kind of, you know, I don't know if there's a point.
Okay. So that may be the
point.
It
might. It's hard to say, but I would assume that all the latest releases of any software for a particular version of the Microsoft operating system are going to assume that, especially with something like XP, that you are patched XP-wise all the way to the top.
Yeah, and one thing, if you don't have Service Pack 3, there's a lot of security fixes in Service Pack 3. You should have that.
You might have the most secure Flash in the world, but you got vulnerabilities everywhere else.
Right. If you must still...
I don't use Windows except as an operating system, so...
Well, that doesn't matter. That's how you...
switch off every talkback that there is. Nothing can get out of my computer without me okaying it. So,
that being said, I mean, that's fair enough, but if you're worried about your Flash being up to date and you haven't updated XP, I don't know that I would invest the time and struggle against it, but if I had to guess, I would say that you're not going to have a lot of luck with most of the current software if you're not patched on XP up to Service Pack 3.
An increasing number of software developers are putting less and less time into making things work with XP. A lot of them are now saying Vista and higher. And I know that...
Vista is lower than XP, right?
Vista and higher.
Yeah, but...
And so, but the point is this, is that you're... Not only are you working with what amounts to an obsolete operating system, you're working in it with an old version of an obsolete operating system.
I get it.
One thing you could try that I saw, and the thing is somebody posted it, and I haven't seen, nobody said, oh, hey, yeah, this worked for me. But somebody who described a similar problem to you said that you could get Flash 10.3, go back to Flash 10.3 and install that, would still work.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can actually get 11.6 to work, but you have to click on the red button in the URL frame and authorize it every time.
Yeah, and the other thing is going back to an older version, Flash itself has vulnerabilities in it.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're about using an older version of Flash, you leave yourself open to those as well.
And it may be possible. I haven't looked at the system requirements for the newest version of Flash, but it might very well say that you're required to have service, it's counting on you having XP Service Pack 3.
Now, the thing is, what is the vulnerability?
What is what vulnerability?
No, Shockwave Flash 11.6 is marked as vulnerable, update now, but what is it vulnerable to, do you know?
I don't know what the Flash exploit is that specifically targets that version. You could probably find that online.
And it's probably more than one, actually.
And again, like I said, if you are worried, I mean, the flash vulnerability is a very, it's like nailing shut your doggy door, but leaving your main door wide, unlocked or wide open. You know, you're focusing on this flash issue, and I don't think that, I don't think patching it's going to get you anything. If what you say is true about you're limiting your data output to the internet and so forth, you're probably not vulnerable to that flash exploit. But if you're worried about that flash exploit and you're not worried about your XP being exploited, I have to confess I don't have a lot of patience for that. I would say, you know, if you're not looking to upgrade from XP anytime soon to a computer running a more updated operating system, at least get your operating system up to date before you try to go forward. If you're going to nurse XP along, you should do the best you should have the best XP you could possibly have. Now, that being said, too, if you've got a computer with one of the old AMD chips that blows up when you install XP Service Pack 3, then,
then don't.
I don't know if that's the case or not. There are some situations where XP Service Pack 3 would not work, or there might have been patched later on or fixed in another way. But
a quick search for Flash 11.6 vulnerability returned 500,000 results, and it's multiple vulnerabilities that even like an unsuccessful attempt to use to exploit it will likely cause denial of service conditions.
So what's the latest version of Flash? He has what?
I think 11.7 is 11. The one that's the latest. 11.6 is was I guess what he had before that would kind of work or something.
Let's see. There it is. Adobe Flash 11.7 notes.
Yeah, I would say I know that a lot of people were having issues with that version of Flash in Firefox. All the fixes I came across were Windows 7 and Windows 8 fixes. You could always try Chrome and the Flash plugin for that.
That's true. You could switch to another browser.
Because a lot of the original exploits too were directed at the Firefox browser via Flash. Chrome wasn't, you know, such a.
And Chrome has its own Flash component in it. It doesn't.
Yeah, it got automatically updated when everything came out. So that might be the better way for him. When he visits Flash sites, just fire up Chrome.
Firefox 22 is a pretty big update to Firefox, isn't it?
It actually got faster. Like, Firefox is one of the faster browsers now, which I was always a Firefox fan, but I started moving over to Chrome. But yeah, Firefox is super speedy. I'm leaving Chrome because I keep going forward and backward with the web history, with the multi-finger salute stuff.
Well, the system requirements don't specifically say SP3 on the XP, but I still say that that's, you know, I don't know if that's what's causing the issue, but it might just be that there are other issues going on, but I would certainly wouldn't hurt you to, hopefully wouldn't hurt you to upgrade to SP3. All right, so looks like we got a few more minutes left before we are going to take a station break. We could probably take another call. What do you think, Groovehouse?
Sure, why not?
Okay, who is it?
All right, up next, we're going to speak with Lee.
Lee, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hello. First of all, I just want to say great program, and I enjoy listening to you when I can.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
The question or comments I have, I just recently came across some information about what I'm saying is a new cell phone company or cell phone service, Republic Wireless, and from what I understand of it, it's kind of like a hybrid service where it operates off Wi-Fi, and if that's not available, it piggybacks off the Sprint network. And the thing that's really piqued my interest is it's offered at $19.95 a month, unlimited text and unlimited calling, and it comes with a Motorola phone. And I'm about headed with AT&T, and I need to upgrade, but I don't like the idea of the contract and the prices because I'm not a large phone user or data user. So anything you know about it or could comment on, I'd appreciate it.
I'm not familiar with Republic Wireless. Have you heard anything, Dwight?
I have. They're a prepaid service. And is this the one that kind of does it that it's free?
That I don't know. I got the information off a finance blog, Then I linked over to their website.
I remembered that they're different. Barrett is showing me their website. $13 for unlimited data, talk, and text. I think a lot of their stuff runs over Wi-Fi.
That's what you're saying.
It requires, yeah, that you have to have Wi-Fi. If you're near Wi-Fi all the time, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a, there is, let's see. What if there's no Wi-Fi?
If you do a Google search on reviews of Republic Wireless, it's not looking like it's receiving really great reviews.
Okay.
That there are some issues with drop calls and problems making calls, and the guy says that I'm reading here the verdict. Believe it or not, I remain quite optimistic about Republic Wireless. I recognize that this is beta, so it's very early stages for this kind of service. So it's probably got some stuff to work out.
Mm-hmm.
So what's your budget for a phone? Free.
Well, I hate to admit, confess how much I've been paying to AT&T, but, I would like to keep it down below $75 a month.
I mean, one way you can do, like, T-Mobile offers prepaid cards. There are a lot of prepaid services out there where you can go and you can get a SIM and you only pay for what you use. So if you don't have a lot of texts, you know, have a lot of data, a lot of phone calls, you get by on $20 or $30 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, you said you don't use a lot of data or voice, so is it mostly that you're texting or...
I don't even do that.
Just don't do much.
He just has like, yeah, I'll sign up for that. They probably
my,
gave
my
you
wife has
so.
A dumb phone, and she pays, you know, to keep it loaded with minutes, and the minutes, they expire, so she has to reload it every so often. But she's paying probably about $5 a month for her cell phone because she only uses it to make the occasional phone call or be available in case I need to get a hold of her or somebody or work needs to get a hold of her. But her number of minutes used per month is probably less than 30. And so she's getting by on, you know, on a prepaid phone for quite cheap. And T-Mobile offers those, and I'm sure the other providers.
You can even go into the big box stores these days and, like, go get a $20, you know, like H2O prepaid card or, you know, a lot of them are out there.
But I would look into one of the providers that has a little bit more standing, has a reliable network. I mean, if you're unhappy with AT&T, you're not the first person to be unhappy with AT&T, but all providers will frustrate you eventually.
But how about the ability to, what they call, piggyback off the Sprint network when you're out of Wi-Fi range?
Well, you would be able to piggyback on what? I don't know about that on this service. Like I said, the
it
Republic
says that it does it, but it just says that it's kind of flaky.
Okay.
Yeah, I would do a little online research to see what people are saying about Republic Wireless. If you Google search Republic Wireless review, you'll find people talking frankly about it.
Okay, because all the reviews on this finance blog were raving.
Well, check some other sites and see what people are saying. I mean,
okay.
If there's no contract and it's not a large buy-in fee, you might try it out and see if it suits your needs.
And remember, on a finance board, there are people who are trying to push the stock and trying to get investors.
Yeah.
Don't get your news like that or reviews like that on a finance board.
And real quick, one other question. Are all your phone numbers transferable today?
Yes. Yes, they are.
Okay.
The other thing you can do is check out Google Voice, and that way you can get a number to take everywhere with you, especially if you're looking at Android phones.
All right. All right, guys. Thanks.
Appreciate your call.
All right.
Bye. So it's going to be the cell phone show eventually. Could be the phone dog show. All right,
music's got kind of that ringtone, old-fashioned ringtone sound right now.
The break is calling. I got to take this. All right, you're listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Roofhouse.
We'll be right back after these messages.
We had no quarrel with anyone. We only want to stop riding the buses until we treated as any other passenger.
Tune in on Wednesdays at 6 p.m. for the best of our past, present, and future from the vault.
From the Vault is a weekly hour from the Pacifica Radio Archives, a national treasure of interviews, performances, and important moments. In this weekly documentary series, From the Vault presents archival audio to bring history to life.
It sounds like Harvey Milk is trying to send a message out
right.
to other gay or non-gay people who want to run for public office.
Get involved. Build your base. Build your support. You can't just get out there and say, hey, I'm a nice guy and I'm going to vote right on all the issues.
From the Vault airs Wednesday at 6 p.m. You can hear a repeat overnight Saturday following the program after hours. This is 90.1 Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston.
Were you one of the many listeners who pledged to receive integrated quantum meditation with George Quant? KPFT is seeking testimonials of your experience with integrated quantum meditation to be shared on air with George Quant when he visits again later this year. If you're interested in sharing your thoughts, call our program director at 713-526-4000, extension 308. We'll arrange a time for you to visit KPFT and record what you have to convey. Again, if you've pledged for integrated quantum meditation during our spring fun drive and wish to share with other listeners a testimonial about what you've gotten out of the practice, call the program director, 713-526-4000, extension 308. You are listening to KPFT Houston.
And welcome back to Technology Bites. We're so glad you didn't go away or that you just tuned in, whichever the case may be. And we've been talking hard drives and smartphones and not-so-smartphones. And
XP Service Pack 2.
Authentic Frontier gibberish.
So far, though, no spyware, so you know, count your blessings.
Frontier
Jinx.
Well, although the guy who's running Service Pack 2 was...
He probably has spyware.
But he had that great accent, though.
Yeah, he was great. He was complimentary, and he sounded cool.
Like, I want to step back to XP2. It sounds like the smart thing to do. Sounds like the BBC just told me to go, like, run XP2.
I get less and less patient with XP people. It's just like, come on. Guys,
they're still
running. It's still
remember all Windows 3.1 people who stuck with that for like a decade.
I had this one guy in particular that would email me at the Chronicle about his Windows 3.1 system well into XP, and when Vista was released, I had to cut him off. I said, come on, man. Please.
Yeah, I say, well, Windows 8 is out. Cut off the XP guys. I mean, there are several reasons. First of all, running XP, as insecure as it is, and particularly after 2014, you know, we're all connected to the same internet, and
you're
a bad citizen on the net if you're running an obsolete operating system, and it's selfish. So
however, there are, I think, if you're a home user, you should probably upgrade. There are a lot of small businesses, and even like a lot of the tools that I use for like development, no one's released a new version.
Go talk to your IT department at the Houston Chronicle and talk to them. We are running it and we should not be, but look at what the real cost is of upgrading company wide. I mean, what the users don't see are, you know, when you talk about like something like SAP or these heavy back-end software applications that are used to run the business, an upgrade, you're talking tens if not hundreds of thousands of dollars to upgrade all that so that everybody can then run more up-to-date operating systems. It's unfortunate that that's a reality in business, even big business. I mean, when you're talking about, well, can we pay
the bigger the business, the more it costs.
Right, but even a small business is going to take a hit. A big business is looking at, well, we can upgrade all of our systems. We're going to have to lay off 50 people.
Well, the thing is that they got themselves in this mess because they waited so long. And if they had taken action earlier, taken action over time, and done it in a methodical way, they wouldn't be in this situation.
Then they wouldn't be, users.
Then they wouldn't be using those programs that they can't use now years ago.
Exactly.
Well, it's unfortunate that, you know, the mentality on the user level goes all the way up into the IT departments of large companies and small companies alike. They're not forward thinkers in terms of technology. They just don't have that innate ability, and then they find themselves kind of stuck. And XP was, for all intents and purposes, pretty solid. I mean, that stuff would work. You had spyware issues and you had vulnerability issues, but all that stuff kind of works together, and there's that mentality that maybe they should, or maybe Microsoft should have continued to expand on somehow making everything more XP-like as they went into the next generation of operating systems, so that you have two choices, or I have two things I think that go against upgrading. One is that the interface has changed now. If you're still on XP, now you're looking at going to Windows 8. And that's dramatic. That's a dramatic change. And beyond that, you're also looking at compatibility issues with all of your software applications. So you were talking about, and I've actually had conversations with people. It's like, I've been running XP and I'm thinking about getting a new computer. I'm going to get a Mac because the learning curve and the software compatibility.
Yes, I've heard that.
I'm looking at buying a new computer, buying new applications because my old applications won't work. And I'm going to have to figure all of this out. So why don't I just go ahead and switch to a Mac?
And I will say that the more recent Microsoft operating systems are much less intuitive. It used to be that I could help somebody on a PC. I mostly use Mac. I could help somebody on a PC because I could figure it out fast enough that they couldn't tell that I was just
catching on.
Just reading the menus and clicking around. And now it's stuff is buried and it's hard to get to the stuff that people or more power user types want to get right to.
That's
kind
of how I felt like XP was the last one that really was just an extension of the previous version, and so you already understood kind of where things were and how to navigate it. And XP looked different. I mean, it had that big green field of grass on it, and it had the wrapped glossy
rubbery.
Looking the start menu and everything, but it was all still in the same sort of place, and like that was the last version that I really used before I much at all in a corporate environment before I went to Linux completely and to Mac, and I've been Mac at home before that. So like I've since downloaded and installed VMs of Vista and 7, and I really don't like Vista. That interface just does not, it doesn't make sense to me. Like, I don't, the little things pop up on the side with the clock, and it's like they took Yahoo widgets and made it a part of the operating system.
You can get rid of that pretty quickly.
Yeah,
it's recommended that you do.
You should, actually. They're big security exploits now.
Well, it's on his VM. It's virtual machines, so it's not
just
that big a deal.
The widgets are like, you take the widgets away.
That's real option. That's very
And Windows Vista and 7 gets much more reasonable once you get rid of that kind of clutter. I don't really have a problem with Windows 7. You're right, it is enough different. There's some irritating things there, but some of the nuance inside of Windows 7 I love. The fact that instead of using a run command, you're using your search box, and the accessibility to some of the stuff under the hood is pretty fluid once you get it. It doesn't take long. You can get a handle on it pretty quick. So if you're looking how to format a hard drive in Windows 7, you can go into the control panel. Instead of having to eke out which icon to click on that might have the data in it, you can search your control panel. That, to me, is very cool. And that kind of exists in Windows 8, and I can see how Windows 8 is an extension from Windows 7. But unfortunately, a lot of the people that are using computers that bought at the XP time, when they first got into computers, if they bought at XP, they're the kind of people that believe that I should get 10 years, 20 years.
And the quality of the hardware at the time, particularly beginning about the late, around, 2004, 2005, 2006, you move up. The hardware still can run it. In fact, what's interesting is that 7 and 8 run really well on 2005, 2006 era hardware.
Yeah.
And it's designed to do that.
Vista ready.
I would recommend that if you are, if you're still using XP, I mean, I agree with Dwight, there's going to come a point where you're going to have to change. Your computer's going to die. it's gonna get stolen. You're gonna
once they stop patching it, then if I was gonna guess, there'll be somebody will find a massive exploit that they can just cruise through networks and exploit.
Right.
All well, those at XP some point, it's kind of like you know Windows 3.1, and you're still on like a Commodore VIC 20. You know, like at some point, it becomes that bad. Like it's just you kind of have to move on. Like you're not gonna have the functionality to do.
It seems like most people have finally, you know, the majority of people, I think, have moved on to the idea that you look at the interface and you figure out how it works. And XP still has some of those people who learned the rote way, where it's like, you know, it's all just do it the same way over and over again, and they learned the steps like a trained horse, not thinking what it means to do it. We're like kids. I mean, they just don't, they get this stuff intuitively. And now you're talking about, you know, I mean, I look at my own kids. It's like my oldest, you know, she grew up with computers in the house pretty much her whole life. And she's, you know, she's 23. So you're starting to get to a big chunk, and that's at Generation Y, so it's a lot of people. But so you're getting it's people who are somewhat older, or I guess sort of old fashioned in their approach, if they're not, you know, senior citizen types who just learned it and stick with only what they what they're gonna. I'm even my mom, who is not a computer type person, they got a new computer and had a new operating system, and they just went with it. You know, when the old one died, they didn't try to insist on keep it all the same. They just learned how to use the new one. I think that's the majority of people have gotten to there, and so it's kind of...
Now, I will say that a lot of people that are balking against upgrading to Windows 8 are not going to be the typical people that need access to the back end of the computer anyway. The fact that they may not be able to find their way to certain settings is not really... The bad reviews of Windows 8 are not reviewing things that are pertinent or relevant to the people who need to upgrade. People that are using XP, that are browsing the web, sending and receiving email, and running a few applications, they could get that sorted out on a Windows 8 computer pretty quickly. So it's not like a lot of the stuff... If consumers are going onto the boards and reading what tech people like us think about Windows 8, they may be kind of misleading themselves as to why they shouldn't buy it or why they don't want a computer running Windows 8. Because, yes, it looks different and it's a little clunky to kind of figure out anything new. But once you do, I mean, if you have your Internet Explorer, your Firefox running, and you have your email program running, you can figure that out, the two or three things that most people use a computer for.
And just go in knowing that in the future, in another version of whatever operating system, it's going to change. It's going to work different. So don't try to get in on the, you know, oh, just move 3 inches to the left and click and it'll work kind of thing. That ship has sailed.
Well, I also live in an age where, I do this myself. I mean, when I'm learning a new operating system and I want to know how it works or how to do something, I get on the web and I search for it. You know, how do I format a hard drive in Windows 8? How do I do whatever?
Shh, they won't need to call us anymore.
Yeah, we worried about that one since 1997.
Well, you know, that's the thing that I've struggled with end users for the longest time is that, you know, search for it on the web. I mean, what's real, and it's more so today than ever before. There are great websites that talk about here's what you need to know, how to use this operating system. And people are just writing tons and tons of great content that say, here's a step by step on how you do blah. And that's how I learned to use my Mac. That's how I learned to use Windows 7. I mean, I still, once in a while, because I've dealt with so many different operating systems, every once in a while I'll find myself, I'll encounter something, I don't know how to do that. How do you do it in XP? I can't remember how you do it in XP anymore. I know how you do it in Windows 7. Go online. There it is.
Right.
And from Microsoft itself, Microsoft's got a great support site. So avail yourself of the information that's out there.
See, I don't mind the general, like, changing.
Would you just stop that phone from doing that, Dwight?
That's all I can do.
Well, pick it up to it doesn't vibrate on the table.
Yeah.
Put it in your shirt pocket.
On your lap.
Put it in your shirt pocket.
Yeah.
Give yourself a chest rub.
So, I don't mind that change, but one thing I'm not liking now is it seems like companies are wanting to make desktop experiences like tablet experiences, and I think that's a bad direction.
Well, that's largely Microsoft, and that
no,
is...
because GNOME 3 did it.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah, but that's 8 people use Linux, so that doesn't count.
But Microsoft's getting cribbing notes from them.
No, what Microsoft is doing is Microsoft's trying to play both sides of the fence because they know the direction things are going. They're trying to tell people, hey, you know, you can have a Windows desktop and you can have a Windows notebook and they'll work and look just the same.
But they won't because unless you have a touch screen, they won't work.
I still think a laptop's a laptop. Notebook's a notebook, you know, those two things, of course. And then the tablet, they're separate things. You shouldn't, I like the idea of having a unified interface.
Right,
they should have design elements that are similar, but I still don't like touching the screen.
And that's what Apple has done. Apple has taken, and that's
I think
a,
Apple's
I agree.
Done a better job.
Yes,
with,
I agree.
With that.
And that's why these tablets from Microsoft have not been selling, because it's not the right approach.
Well, we finally separated the data from the hardware. I mean, it's, you know, for if you're a programmer type, model view controller has kind of gotten expanded to a lot more things,
mm-hmm.
so that your data, you know, the whole Microsoft, well, your data, if it's in the same system, then you'll be able to get at it the same way. You can take your Android phone, your Windows machine, you know, whatever platform you want, and get at your same data in so many ways anymore that it does it doesn't really matter.
Right.
And so Microsoft's got to find some new FUD.
Right.
All right. Well, we got calls in the queue. We can whine and praise about Microsoft all night long. If you're running XP Service Pack 2, please don't call.
Oh, look, all the calls dropped.
Oh.
Yep. Hey. All right, Greenhouse, who's up next?
All right, up next on the second half of the show, we are going to speak with Dan.
Dan.
Whoops, that was...
No.
Looks like...
Dan, you're on the air with Technology Bites. Sorry about that, Rodolfo.
Hey, guys, love the show.
Well, thank you.
Here's the problem. A little old technology, but looking for a modern solution. So I have an old Silicon Graphics O2 workstation.
Those are awesome looking boxes. Those are beautiful. That's my favorite computer, I think, as far as aesthetic design.
I've got a whole museum. I've got an Octane, an O2. I've got an SG 4D20, just going back many, many years. Anyway, this O2 has been hosting a confocal microscope, and I'm trying to pull some data off of it. In the past, many years ago, I used a remote login through a serial port using a PC through a no modem cable, and that doesn't seem to be working when I'm running. I thought I'd go back to an XP machine. Got all sorts of machines available. The question is, you have to set up a
terminal,
an interface to it. You know, a network to it. In the past, you didn't have to do that. I think I ran it under Windows 98 or 2000, and you could do run a terminal emulation through the DOS window and do a remote login, and then do an FTP multiple GET from the SGI. My question is, what's the best way to do it? When I did it through the XP, I would set up Hyper Terminal, I guess, and it seems to think it's a modem phone dial-in. And I can't seem to find a way around it.
Well, if I was going to do a terminal emulation, I would use something like PuTTY, maybe.
But do you still have to set up a network under, under network, under XP network?
I don't know if you have to do that necessarily. If you're going to access it, does the SGI if you plug it into a hub or a switch, does it get an IP address from the network? Does it get it for you?
I can plug this thing into the network. It's got a very old operating system on it, but I guess the school will still let me put it on temporarily. What's the easiest way to pull the data off of it if I can get it onto the...
We were just griping about people using XP Service Pack 2, and you hit us up with an SGI 2 computer question. wait, I just want to just take a moment to enjoy the irony of how enthusiastic people all of a sudden are about your question.
This is 1993 or something.
It certainly won't get any viruses, that's for sure.
Oh, no. Well, actually...
you know,
they shut down the FTP server on it because... It had a vulnerability. The SGI had a vulnerability.
I would see.
SGI was pretty well known for being Swiss cheese.
I had an international, the surface attack on an older machine of mine.
All right, Barrett.
I would just see if FTP is enabled on it and see if you can't FTP the files off.
Right, I have FTP. I can get FTP running on the SGI.
Okay,
should be able to SCP also. Secure copy. Should have SSH on it.
Is it O2 or O2 plus? Is it a blue one or a purple one?
It's a blue one.
Okay, a little bit older.
It's the real O2.
It's the real O2,
cool.
Yeah.
Little blue.
So FTP is running, and you have an account that you can connect, you can get an FTP client, or you can even use you can use FTP from the command prompt on an XP box or whatever. As long as you have an IP address of the O2 box, you can FTP to that.
It's also going to be a Unix file system. I don't remember what SGI ran, but
you could probably connect NFS.
You could probably do NFS, or you could pull the hard drive out. It's probably IDE.
You
could mount those file systems under a Linux box probably and just pull the files straight off.
There's an idea for you.
Right, but I don't have a Linux box to do that on.
But you could run you could run a Unix virtual machine.
it's going to be a fat SCSI hard drive system.
Okay.
Ultra-wide or a wide SCSI. It's a 93 machine.
I don't know how to connect to it using a terminal directly to the...
If you're going through an old modem cable, it should still work. The deal is, if you're using Hyperterminal, at some point they made a change to where it wants to grab a phone line first. You've got to go install maybe some drivers to get a virtual COM port up, like maybe some FTDI drivers to where your USB port or whatever your serial port will actually show up as a modem. And then at that point, you can go into Hyperterm, say, hey, I want to use like COM 5, it might be the example. And then you can say, hey, I want to talk to it via like Kermit or Xmodem or whatever the SGI, protocol at the time was. But that's probably what you have to do. You probably need a virtual COM port.
Once I got a remote terminal, connection, and I could just do a remote login and then an FTP, and invoke FTP and just get a multiple get and pull the whole directory out.
Yeah, just do that. I'd do it over the network.
If you do it over the network, it's answering on the FTP port. Yeah. You don't even have to do any of that. So if you can get it put on a network with an IP address that's reachable from your other machine, then you can just run an FTP client, connect to it, log in.
Or do NFS. I know those things did NFS. Okay. You could do NFS.
Okay. Well, that's certainly the easiest way to go. I've been just so frustrated with the Hyperterminal wanting to be a modem and Windows wanting me to set up a local network, which seemed to be ridiculous.
Maybe we're tackling this the wrong way. It's an older machine. Go get a tape drive.
I have one of those.
See if you can go find a mammoth backup system.
The Windows computer doesn't have to necessarily be set up on a network. The Windows computer just needs to have an IP address on the network and then be able to route to another computer. So you don't have to do much in terms of setting that up. Usually you just set up the network card. It's usually by default it's set up to where you plug. Is the XP box, is it on the internet via a router?
It can be. It can be. It hasn't been. But it can be. I also went ahead and put an Ethernet switch.
Is this at an office or is this at your home?
It's in the office.
All right. If you can get both computers to get an IP address
on the same network,
Then you should be able to just use whatever protocol you want to connect to that box via the IP address. If it's an XP box, it should be able to play. If you can get it on the internet through a router or through a switch, it gets an IP address, it gets on the net. You don't have to do any other network configuration. It can reach the other computer via the IP address. But anyway, I wish you a lot of luck, and thanks for your call and bringing back those great nostalgic memories and making us look kind of hypocritical for being excited about O2, disappointed in XP.
We're just channeling what we felt at the time. We didn't get a chance to use an O2 to the point where we were,
jaded.
Couldn't afford one, yeah. I was in college and...
I remember we had some SGI machines this was 25 years ago, back at Neosoft, we had a couple of SGI machines, and they seem so primitive now, but those are the, you know, those were the ones that Industrial Light Magic used to render all of their CGI.
But I looked up the connecting to an O2 workstation via null modem cable, and it said, and there's a wiki that came up on it. The terminal connected to a serial port of an SGI machine may be one of, there's a list, a hardware terminal that emulates DEC VT100.
Yeah.
A PC running the terminal program under Windows 3.11. A PC running the hyper terminal program under Windows. PuTTY. A Palm Pilot using Palm Telnet.
Look at that Palm guy.
Wow. That's, Palm guy again. Wow. That's what I was going to say. It's like, if they both have IP, and you can use PuTTY to emulate any number of terminals.
PuTTY does a lot. I spend most of my days in PuTTY on Windows 7.
It's PUTTY.exe, and it's free, and it's downloadable. It's a great terminal
it's
emulation
very small,
program.
Self-contained program.
Yeah, you don't install it. It's just a standalone executable. It's brilliant. All right, Groovehouse.
I actually admined an O2.
Did you?
Yeah. And an Onyx 2, I think.
I'm trying to get my B-Box to connect to my O2.
They went from the BOS to nothing, to the... though. Yeah, when I was doing the Google search on it, I saw an article
where
it's
when like, they were dying,
SGI cuts prices dramatically on...
Well,
know,
when they were dying with those, they started making like huge processor boxes. They basically were competing with Cray's, like the SGI 9000s, which were rack mount systems that were competing with Cray as far as like hyper performance processing. But yeah, they died out of that too. I don't remember who bought them, but yeah, Cray and SGI were competing at the top end when SGI kind of fell out with desktops and workstations.
You're talking anybody who's not who, let's see, where was I going to go? The on our listener base, there's a bunch of people who could be in their 20s who go, "What's SGI?
Yeah.
Cray? Huh? Who?"
They were like, you know, the Apple of that day.
Silicon Graphics.
Like, as far as the workstation
Sun,
market.
Sun. You bought,
instead
what,
of the
you
consumer
bought
a
server
market.
From Sun? Mm. Remember that? That used to be, you wanted Sun servers if you were going to.
Yeah, we had Sun workstations for a while when I first came to the Chronicle. That's what. No, not when I first came to the Chronicle. That was the first thing we switched when we switched off of a mainframe system. We had that. Remember the three button mice with the laser thing, and you had to use them on a mirror, like
that,
a mirrored
that,
surface?
That metal pad with the with the dots.
Yeah,
I used one of those for a number of years.
Yeah,
it was a Sun. Yeah, it was a Sun workstation. I had an Ultra 5 or something.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So a lot of the gaming stuff came out of SGI stuff, like OpenGL. I was trying to find the how it works out, but OpenGL is a byproduct of SGI.
All right. Groovehouse.
Yes.
False alarm earlier, this time for real?
No, it's another caller. I accidentally just hit the wrong button, so it's all right.
I was going to say false alarm. I was reaching out to you to bring a phone call in the air. And I got
interrupted.
And
then Flicked it just, you know, all of a sudden he's feeling better.
I had my nap and now I'm better.
Okay.
He's in his happy place now.
Grumpy man is awake now. Ready to play. We start talking about old technology. You see his life going back into him. It's like esoteric operating systems.
Energized.
There's a reason to live. They were talking about XP servers back too, and I was feeling under the weather and taking a nap. But now O2 is little O2.
I'm also recalling O2 Girl.
O2 Girl?
Yeah. Nobody else will probably in the world would remember that except maybe six people, but
I'll Google it and see if I remember it that way. No. Mm-mm. All right, there is the O2 Arena. There's the O2, isn't that that's a wireless provider now in the UK, O2.
Hmm. Yeah, and they have an arena, and so there's concerts and stuff all over.
Yeah, well, O2 is like the Verizon of Europe. All right, Groovehouse,
yes.
False alarm twice now. I got interrupted by Flicted when I was berating Flicted. So who's up next?
All right, up next we're going to speak with Brad.
Brad, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. You guys take the real tough questions here. So, my company is using Windows XP.
Yeah.
We've been using it. That's not really my question, though, but it was funny that you were talking so much about it, and it's true. We've been using it since I got there, and I got a new computer in 2007 and still running it today. So it's just going to cost a lot of money to upgrade, which is why they don't do it, I think.
Yeah.
My question, though, is about a Mac. I had about 450 gigs of free space on a MacBook Pro when I got it, and I tried to use Time Machine to put my previous profile and apps on from, or the applications from another computer. So I did that. And after I did that, I decided that I didn't want them on there, so I deleted that profile. Now, I'm looking at all the profiles on there, which is only a guest, shared, admin, and then mine. And mine only has 89 gigs, but the hard drive only shows 120 gigs available of the 500. I cannot find out where this space, where that, and I've, you know, the other profiles deleted, all that stuff has been deleted, and I've erased it, but it,
are you almost sure?
Like, yeah, are you sure? Because it'll ask you sometimes, yeah. And if you don't tell it to delete it, it'll make a backup copy.
Delete that profile, it'll ask you, and if you don't choose like delete the profile and delete all the data, it'll delete the profile, but it'll make a backup copy of everything somewhere, and I don't remember where that is.
If you go to the users folder at the root of your hard drive. It'll show it'll show the profiles that you listed, and it'll also show any of those any backup ones that it does.
At the users level, which I'm in now, I see where it says users. I see, like I said, admin, mine, guest, and then shared. Those are the only four that I see, and I've done a Apple info on them, and you know, basically the admin is shown 0 and. And the guest 15K and shared 680K and then the mine is showing 90 gigs.
Have you emptied your trash lately?
Well, that would be too easy. And I mean,
but have you?
Well, I've emptied it all the time. Okay. But yeah, I mean, I'll empty it again. But,
are you familiar with the terminal command? I mean, are you familiar with the terminal program?
I've done commands, but I'm not that familiar with it.
Because I can tell you what I would do.
Yeah.
I would open a terminal window and I would start running Unix commands, searching for files over a certain size, and start at the top level and do du-ks of star and see which folders came up as having a whole lot of space taken, and then I would dig down until I found
there
where
is
that
a
space
free,
was.
There is a free, just doing a quick Google on it, there's a free program called Disk Inventory X that you can download and run, and it gives you a kind of a map of what's on your hard disk coded by type.
That's a good program. There's a similar one for Windows.
Yeah, I've used Disk Inventory X. It works very well.
It'll show you all the folders on your drive. It'll let you sort by size. It'll show you which folder's using the most space. You can dig into that folder and see if a certain subfolder is. It's a great program. If you want to isolate what's using up your data on your drive, Pete has answered your question. Thank you, drive-through.
Awesome.
All right, the Disk Inventory X. It's a free program too.
Or learn Unix commands.
I think Pete's answer gets us onto the next call.
RM minus FR asterisk.
Command line humor. Command line humor.
If you didn't laugh at that, do not type that on your computer.
If you're still running Windows 3.1, Dell trees /Y. Uh-huh. All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who's up next?
Up next, we're going to speak with Chris.
Chris, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi, great show, guys.
Thank
Listen,
you.
I have probably an 8-year-old Dell computer that's running Windows Vista. Here's the deal. I've got about 40 gigs worth of music and just files and all that on there on my hard drive, on the C drive, and I can't get to it. And when I do the search and when I click to show the properties, and it shows me 0 files, but I know it's on there simply because when I go to, like, my iTunes and pull up a song and pull up properties, it gives me the path. When I try to recreate that path on my search, it shows 0 files, 0 memory.
But when you, but like in iTunes, will it actually play the song?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I can access Word files and all that, PowerPoint, Excel. But I think it might be one of those users. It's asked me for, like, public users and all that. But, you know, it gives me a path. For example, the path to one song, it's a Mark Knopfler song. C, you know, / my music, / and it gives...
So you created a folder called My Music on the root folder?
Well, it's on my C drive. What do you mean?
Well, see, like in Windows Vista and Windows 7, You have user profiles, so you have C colon, and you have a user folder under that, and under the user folder you have your different user profiles.
Okay. So,
and typically when you're storing music or storing documents and so forth, it stores it in the My Music folder under users.
Under that yeah. specific
under
user.
That specific user.
So it wouldn't be yeah. at the top level.
So it wouldn't be at C:\MyMusic. It would be C:\Users\Username\MyMusic. Now, if you have music scattered into different user profiles, you may not necessarily have permissions to look in those user profiles and see the files
well,
that are there.
Well, I think that may be the problem because, you know, it's asking me for users. There's a user file in public and then a user file my name, and I can't – it's not under my name, so I don't know if I accidentally transferred into a – into another user file that I can't get to or what, but I know the files are on the hard drive.
Okay, but if you may want to try, this is one possibility, is
okay.
with iTunes, there, and you probably want to Google this because there's multiple steps, but with iTunes, there's instructions for how to move your iTunes media folder.
Okay.
And so it may be that if you get into that and move the folder to make sure it's in your user and in under your path.
Well, I want to use it to move it to like a backup.
Right, but right. you need to move it someplace where you can find it. So what Pete's suggesting is that there's an option in iTunes where you can tell iTunes to move your library to another folder. So you can put it on like a folder on your desktop under your user profile.
Backup drive.
Well, you can you get it moved, or you could try going. I wouldn't necessarily do it where you moved it from this obscure hidden place on your hard drive to an external drive.
Uh-huh.
I'd move it to some place where you could see it on the computer. So then you go, okay, here's my music library.
Got it.
Because the moving it from one location on the existing hard drive to a new location on the same hard drive is a quick rewrite of the file allocation table.
Okay.
The data doesn't actually move, and it only takes about 5 seconds to do it.
Okay.
Transferring that to an external hard drive can take minutes or hours, depending on how big it is.
Okay.
So before you get to where you want to move it to another drive, move it to a place where you can actually put your eyeballs on it on your existing drive, and then grab it and drag it and throw it onto an external hard drive.
Yeah, so just Google move iTunes music folder, and you said you're on Vista, or the machine was Vista? Yeah, move iTunes music folder Vista, and the first thing that comes up is a support doc from Apple.
Great. So do you think, I mean, given what I've told you, I have public users and my users and all that, do you think it's under a different user where I'd have to get like a password? Or I mean, I'm trying to figure out where all these files.
Again,
they're Word files and all that too. Where they're all?
If you have stashed them in, if they are stashed under another user profile somewhere, the fact that you can access them using iTunes is interesting because typically you wouldn't be able to access files in another user's profile. Unless your account's administrator, which is probably what you are running as an administrative account, that's why you can see it. If you find that the files cannot be moved, then you're going to have to figure out where the files are, and then you can go and take ownership of that folder. That's a whole nother ball of wax right there. If you do a search in Vista, if you just do a search for, say, Knopfler, does it come back and find the Knopfler folder?
Let me find it. Hold on.
Oh. I mean, that would be one. Whatever you said.
No,
you had,
no items match your search.
Okay, I know Vista search is kind of flaky. It doesn't index all the user folders.
But it's weird because when I do a search on my C drive, every folder, the folders are there. Well, the C drive is there.
Well,
but
iTunes is telling you what the actual path to the file is.
Yeah.
Is that path include your user profile, or is it?
Yes. So it says C My Music and then slash.
Really, it says C My Music.
Yeah.
Not C colon backslash users.
Yeah, it is C colon backslash My Music backslash artist name backslash.
But not C colon backslash users. So you've stored it in a My Music folder on the root. And Windows 7 and Windows Vista hates when you do that. It really, really hates when you do that. It may not be able to access that. So if
my goal is to get it out of there and put it onto a hard,
I understand what your goal is. But what I'm not understanding is how you've managed to get it to where you can't see it. Because normally you could open up Windows Explorer. You should be able to see your entire C drive.
Yeah.
But you're saying you can. Can you see the My Music folder if you do that?
Yeah. For example, when I click on the Knopfler song properties and it says summary where, and it gives the exact path. C colon.
Right. But if you back. And then if you hit click on start. And you type C colon backslash in that path, can you get there?
No, it says no files found.
He may want to start up Explorer and run it as administrator to where that has the file explorer has permissions.
They
to
might be
the files
hidden.
Around.
They might be hidden.
Yeah.
You might have the folders. Okay, there's an option in Windows to where you can display hidden files and folders.
Okay.
I would enable that.
Enable?
Enable display hidden files and folders. Now, if what I just said doesn't make sense to you and you don't know automatically off the top of your head how to do that, Google it. Google Windows Explorer display hidden files and folders. You'll find instructions because what it is under tools or under, let me see.
It's maybe like view options or something.
Well, if you can guess as good as I can, but hang on a second. So if you go, if you click on start and then you type in C colon backslash, you can go alt. View,
mm-hmm.
And then you can. There's a way to do it. I can't remember how.
All right, I'll Google it.
But you'll find it. They might just be hidden. That might be why.
I think the problem. I know they're hidden. I just hope they're not locked down.
They're not locked down. If you can, if you can play them in iTunes, you can get them.
Okay.
You just have to outsmart your computer. That's all you have to do.
All right. Well, I'll try both. I'll try to display the hidden items and also the iTunes option of moving the folders through Google, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, like I said, the fact that iTunes can access it tells me that that they're accessible to you. iTunes sees them; it knows it. It doesn't care if the file is hidden or not. That's why I'm thinking that the files are probably set to some kind of hidden mode.
Yeah, yeah.
Where they don't show up in a regular view of a folder,
mm-hmm.
But you can turn on the option to show hidden files.
Have you? And you may have said this, but not said it the same way. Have you done the thing where you right click on the song in the library and say show
file,
you can see it?
He sees the path.
Yeah.
There's
but can he back up the path? Can he come back up the path to see?
He can get all the way to the file folder. It just shows that there's nothing in it.
Yeah, it says zero files found.
He can get all the way to the Mark Knopfler music folder, but he doesn't see the file.
Well, even on my C drive, I'll just do C drive, colon,
we've
and
beaten this
no
horse as much as I care to beat it. he can see it, and it's just hidden.
Yeah.
He needs to turn off the fault. First of all, did you hear the part where he talked about it's in C colon backslash my
music? Yes, yes. Right. But the fact that the way iTunes calls it and brings it up uses the actual folder window itself.
And not necessarily the user profile
folder? And not the user profile folder.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So if you were to go onto the hard drive and go C colon backslash users and then dig down into your profile, you might see it. But it sounds to me like he got to the folder using Windows Explorer and he got to see the file.
There's a public folder, and I click on the public folder, the folder is empty.
There's nothing. It's not going to be in the public folder. It's going to be under your user profile.
Okay.
Or one of the other user profiles on the computer, but most likely yours.
Go to
C colon backslash users real quick. We'll beat the horse a little while longer.
Okay.
C colon backslash users. Let me
Got
know
it.
When you're there. Now you will see a number of folders in the users folder. There's like a public or a guest, but there's one that's probably your username.
Yep.
And are there any others? Is there one for your wife or your kids or the friend that you had stay the night last week?
Yeah, no.
Okay, so you see your user folder. Double click on that.
Okay.
Now you'll see another series of folders. One of them might say My Music.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see that?
When I click on it's users dash folder, it's my name. Hold on. Yeah, nothing, zero items.
Zero items. So what he has going on, I'll tell you what he's got going on. He's got that virus.
that set all the files to hidden.
Oh.
Yes. So that's what I was saying is that there's a virus that'll
And
do
that's
it.
Why he can see it through the iTunes
because
folder.
iTunes does not care that the file is hidden.
Yeah.
So his
right.
his file there was a have you had any virus problems in
oh,
the last
I did and I've run the
there
antivirus.
It is. Yeah, yeah. There's
there's
a virus that goes through and sets all the attributes on certain files and folders as hidden.
That's
so
it.
They do not show up in a standard view when you're using Explorer. So you there's a tool that will let you unhide everything. You don't necessarily want to do that, but if you go into the folder option and enable view hidden files, you'll see your files. All right, hang up on the phone. I'm done with this call.
Now, aren't you glad I asked that question?
But there's another way with if you get an SGI-02 and a null modem cable.
No, I knew it was I was relatively certain it was a hidden file issue, and what I had said the last thing before you chimed in was like, Google search, figure out how to show hidden files in Windows Explorer, and you'll see the files.
See, although it brings it up in a traditional-looking file folder, when you do the show in, it's the same thing
yeah,
on the
yeah,
back
yeah.
as show in Finder.
No, I see. What, right? I know what you're saying. I see
and
what
so
you're
it's saying. Like a tunnel to it, and so if he could see it that way, if he could back up in that window, he might be able to see the file.
So right. In other words, if he goes like if he highlights the song in iTunes and it says reveal in Finder or show in folder, yeah, then it will show the whole folder. And then he might be able to then backspace
the
path to the next level up and see all the folders or files that
right.
are under that.
Right.
Although, do you think that the iTunes Explorer would show hidden files?
I don't know. This is
that also wouldn't necessarily allow him to go get them and transfer them to another drive.
One thing he could test is once he sees it in there, see if he can drag it to the desktop and see.
All
what
right.
Happens.
The other thing that's going to happen is if it's what I think it is, mm-hmm. and they are set to hidden, that he's going to have a struggle. But he copies, I don't know if that file attribute's gonna come with it.
Come with it, yeah.
So, if it's what I think it is, if it is that, in fact, that virus, there is a tool available through Bleeping Computer called Unhide, and basically you download this file and you run it, and it goes through your entire file system and changes everything to be not hidden. That's all your protected operating system files. It's everything. It's a mess. But you can then see all of your files.
So it's possible, he said he had virus problems, that the virus is gone,
but it left this problem behind. Yeah, that's what it sounds like to me. All right. Are we done yet? No, we have more time left and calls to take. Sorry, that was just so maddening because I knew if I had that computer in front of me, I was like, here's your darn music files. Copy them to a hard drive. All right, Groovehouse, who's up next?
Up next, we will speak with Rudolfo.
Rudolfo, sorry about the false alarm earlier, Rudolfo.
That's cool. You sure you got me this time?
We do.
Excellent. Well, y'all heard of DuckDuckGo, a search engine?
DuckDuckGo?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Not a joke. Okay. And
well,
I hear it doesn't keep track of your... They don't store your searches and
searches.
Your website.
Yeah.
They got real big after this NSA thing. So.
Right. It's an anonymous search engine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And feel real safe. I'm sure the NSA knows nothing about it. If they wanted to know your search stuff, going to DuckDuckGo ain't going to get you any more privacy than any of the rest of us have.
It still doesn't tie into everything else like Google does. Like, you go to Google,
Google's
tied into Facebook.
The deal
it's tied into everything. You at least here, it's like whatever you search for, it's not being reported to 15 other sites.
At least with DuckDuckGo, yeah, Google doesn't get your data.
Right. DuckDuckGo gets it.
And the NSA in that room in San Francisco where the AT&T backbone goes through it and they get everything, it still goes there.
So what are you trying to protect?
What was that search you didn't want anybody to know you were doing, Rodolfo?
I mean,
just kidding.
One of the things, you do need to be kind of protected. I like the idea of anonymity on the web, and you don't necessarily have to be doing anything wrong to want that.
No, you don't.
It's quickly being eroded. You can't really...
Spoken like a true criminal. No, I we're familiar with DuckDuckGo. I cannot confirm or deny the actual anonymity that they provide.
Okay.
I mean, for sure... It's not going through Google. So it's not it's not going through all of their servers, but ultimately your search request is tied to your IP address. It goes out through the internet, retrieves the data, and brings it back to you. That information is captured any number of points along the way.
It might take a little bit of reading, but something you could do over the next week or so is if you go Google Tor, T-O-R, which stands for the Onion Router, that is an anonymizer, and it more or less it takes whatever web traffic you have, it throws it through a few different parts of the web to where it's kind of hard to trace it back directly to you, to where if you're kind of concerned about privacy, you might want to check that out.
Yeah. No, I just thought it was pretty cool that they came up with this, especially after with the NSA doing what they're doing and all that.
Yeah, there's also...
I even compared it to Google and Bing, and I still like Bing or Google. Their searches wasn't in all that, but it's just pretty cool that someone did actually try to, or is trying to do away with, get away from being followed and all that. That was it.
Yeah, there's some good stuff out there.
Yes, sir. All right.
Thanks for your call. All right.
Has anybody tried pressurecookerbomb.com? That one's supposed to be totally...
Let me type that in.
All right.
Meanwhile,
I am not going to follow Blake and Box on Twitter, and I'm not going to become a friend on Facebook with
really?
The Blake and Box.
Really?
I follow him, and I'm not even that active of a Twitter user.
Wow. I didn't think you'd get angry over it.
I'm not angry.
You invited him?
No, he suggested it as a friend.
Yeah, because you were talking about it.
I haven't gotten the
Blinkin' Box has a Facebook profile?
Yeah, so why didn't you invite him to do it?
I thought he was already a friend.
No.
I figured Mr. Social Media would have been on that.
I am now.
There you go. Sorry.
Kill me.
I won't make any more suggestions.
It's a tackle box with LED lights.
It's pretty cool.
It's pretty neat.
You guys are excited.
It's got under tray.
Oh, I'm going to go to the Geek Gathering. Do you think the Blinkin' Box will be there?
Let's check
Twitter. I
hope
the Blinkin' Box is there. We should have an app.
It's stealing your thunder.
We should put it.
That box is stealing your thunder.
My thunder?
You're upset about it.
I'm as upset at the Blinkin' Box as I am with Dwight and his food trucks. No, I think we should put a GPS.
At least the Blinkin' Box shows up.
We should take the Blinkin' Box to the total absurd level of putting a GPS in it and coming up with an app that runs on Android and iPhone. Where is the Blinkin' Box?
Yes.
Of course, you know where Jim Thompson lived, probably, but screw his privacy. We want to know where the Blinkin' Box is. He's relinquished his rights to privacy.
He's the host.
He's patient zero. Where in the world is the Blinkin' Box? Now you should get it all geared up with a GPS and then start mailing it around the country.
You know, I've heard rumors.
Here's a picture of the Blinkin' Box blinking in front of the Eiffel Tower.
There you go.
I can see that it's really there on my app that tracks
actually,
the
Blinkin' Box had sent me a friend request already. So.
I've heard the Blinkin' Box is going to figure prominently in the gritty reboot of the Terminator series.
It's the...
But it's going to be a lot more blinky and light lit up, you know?
All right. Blinkin' Box. My thunder.
I'll be box.
Are you Sarah Connor?
Blink, 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 blink.
I'll blink box.
I'll blink box. I'll be box. All right. Well, I was driving through town. I was listening to this radio show about a light-up tackle box.
All hail the Blinkin' Box.
All right, Groove House.
Yes.
What's the next thunder stealing call?
The next thunder stealer is Scott.
Scott, you're on the air.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I have been trying to use Gparted and can't figure it out. I get into one of their options, and I come to a point where it prompts me for what screen resolution to only want. And then the screen goes blank, but sometimes there's these little rainbows along the left edge of the screen.
So what operating system are you trying to run here?
Well, Gparted is a...
Gparted is not... I thought Gparted is a disk partitioning software.
Yeah, and it's a form of Linux.
No, Gparted is not...
It's a program inside of Linux.
Yes, Gparted is a program that you run inside of a Unix computer to be able to manage partitions on a hard drive or create them.
Yeah,
Well,
so what operating system are you using? Again, I go back to.
Well, I'm trying to. It downloads. It downloads whatever is on this CD.
Oh, so you've got a CD?
Yeah, a portable
CD that runs Gparted.
Now, the main operating system on the
I'm just trying to make sure that we're following along here at home. So you've got a boot CD that loads up some flavor of Unix or another that allows you to run Gparted so that you can partition a drive. And you're saying that when you boot from this CD, it's asking you questions about your screen resolution and so forth?
Yeah.
Okay.
And you're trying to do this on Windows 7?
No, he's booting from the disk.
Windows 7 is the system on the computer, but I am bypassing it because I've booted from the CD.
It's a live CD that has a disk partition utility on it. Why are you trying to access your drive with a disk partition utility? Are you trying to remove or repartition the drive?
Well, yes, I'd like to partition the drive to where I can put some other operating systems on it. It's 1 terabyte. That's plenty of room for Windows 7.
Well, I would suggest maybe trying another
VirtualBox.
Well, no, I was going to say, but rather than do that, if you're looking to wipe out the existing partitions on the drive, is get a good stable, bootable live CD of something like Ubuntu.
I think what he probably did was there is a Gparted boot up, and that's all it does on SourceForge. He probably got that. It's not going to have the driver installed. It's not going to detect your video card. It's not going to do anything like that.
Right.
So, like, not Steel Jay's Thunder, but yeah, go find the distro you want and boot that up into live mode. Run Gparted through there. It'll just start on up and then do whatever you need to do.
Yeah, there are some utilities out there that are designed to allow you to boot into a shell and do certain things, and there might be one specific to Gparted that's designed to let you wipe out partitions. But if you were to get a bootable CD of the operating system that you care about, and you can then use Gparted there, and you can create other partitions to load other operating systems. But I will tell you this, if you cannot get through that part right there, you may be better off virtualizing.
You can't boot Gparted. Yeah.
Running a lot of VirtualBox or whatever parallels is easier, in my opinion, it's easier than trying to set up multiple partitions and having to reboot the machine every time and only have one OS running at a time.
In my mind, there's almost no reason whatsoever to deal with a multi-boot system where you're actually creating physical partitions on your drive to play with other operating systems. I'm running the Mac OS as the host operating system, and I've got Windows 7 and Windows 8 running on this computer that's sitting in front of me. No drive partitions, none of that. If I get tired of one, I drag it to the trash and I delete it.
The only reason you want to do it is if you need to run things that actually need to really touch the hardware or graphics intensive things like a game.
Right.
If you need to run a game, you probably want to run
natively.
If you're
interested in exploring operating systems and how they work
the
and understanding
Linux game community.
Right. Sure. This guy doesn't sound like he's
no. He calls
Tracer.
He calls all the time, and I applaud his efforts to get into esoteric operating systems, but he kind of heads off down a path that.
Us back when you got an SGIO2.
Oh. All right, Groovehouse. Do we have time for the last call?
I doubt it, but we'll take it.
All right.
Garland,
you're on the air real quick. We're almost out of time.
I've got Windows 7 and IE10, and left-click on links, they won't open. I have to right-click and say open. Is there any way to correct that or change it?
You click on the link and it won't open when you normal click it or left click
it. Right. Right.
I have fixed this before, but I can't remember the fix.
Send me a message via the website telling me this problem and I'll find the answer for
you.
If
you Google IE10 left click won't open link, there's an answersmicrosoft.com from this year that has instructions to.
Yeah, sorry, I can't help you on that one, but it's on the web.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. All right. Well, that's all the calls we have, and that's all the time we have for calls.
And all the patience we have.
Yeah.
And all the thunder.
All the thunder.
Blinken
it's
box.
All been stolen.
Blinken box.
We should have the Blinken box on as a guest.
Maybe when Jay's out, the Blinken box will take his place.
Absolutely.
Yes. When Jay takes vacation, the Blinken box will fill in for Jay.
It's the Singularity featuring the Blinken box.
The thunder shall be reclaimed.
No, there was a great, there was a guy at the Geek Gathering, and he came up to the Blinken box, and he said, well, is that all that it does? Blinks? Is that all it does? I said, good Lord, man.
It's called the Blinken box.
I said, it's a tackle box that lights up and has sensors on it. What more do you want it to do? I mean, this guy was disappointed in the Blinken box. He like myself, scorned the Blinken box, but he did it for the wrong reasons. I haven't come up with my reasons yet.
You're more interested in Pleo abuse. Get KD5 to bring this thing. That's a long story, another episode.
Long story short, we're out of here. Thank you for listening to Technology Bison. Thanks for coming to the studio, Pete. You should
glad
do this
do
more
it.
Often.
I'm going to try to.
The interactive version of the news got under Grushaus' skin a little bit earlier. They're chiming in. See, I payback some bitch. All
right. Well, nobody took my thunder, though.
I got your thunder right here.
Yeah.
Feel the thunder.
We're 38 seconds over your thunder at this
all
point.
Right, go. Thanks for tuning in. You've been listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
the King of Thunder.
Do you feel lucky? Are you a meat eater? Well, I got something to tell you. On Saturday, July 27th, the 27th annual Watermelon Dance and Summer Social happens at the Last Concert Cafe, 1403 Nan Street, just off the Hardy McKee exit on I-10. This year's lineup will include Q&A, Premium Blend, Pot Roast, The Hightailers, and Dancing by the Tribal Lilies. We're going to be announcing some surprises in the coming days as well. The door fee is $20 for one and $30 for two. Proceeds benefit this listener-supported, homegrown community radio station. So if you eat meat, there's going to be plenty of it. That is, the other red meat, watermelon. So we'll see you on Saturday, July 27th at the Last Concert Cafe for number 27. 90.1 KPFT, Houston.
Want to help KPFT but can't make the drive out to the Little House on Lovett Boulevard? A great way to aid KPFT is as simple as logging into Facebook and Twitter. Connect with KPFT via social media. It's simple. Just visit twitter.com forward